Let's get started. Welcome to the walkthrough for problem set 4, Sudoku. This problem set is a bit similar to the game of 15. They're both board games. Sudoku's a little bit more fun, a little bit more common. I don't think you hear of many people playing 15, but people do Sudoku, or at least did a few years ago, I think. So this will be a fun game that you're going to implement. It's going to look better than game of 15 also, so you might even give it to some of your friends to try to play with, and you yourself might procrastinate by playing with it. So let's dive in. This is what it's going to look like. So if you haven't read the problem set spec yet, this image is from there, but it's going to look a lot cooler than your game of 15. So we actually have colors. We have a little bit more of a game board feel here. And this is actually already done for you. So there's a ton of distribution code that we're going to look at that actually implements this. So that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to look at the distribution code. You guys are getting about 600 lines of code for this problem set. So that's huge, and that's great, right? Because then that means you don't have to implement those 600 lines, but you do have to go through them and make sure you understand what those 600 lines of code are doing, because that's going to give you priceless hints for how to do how to implement the functions that you guys actually have to implement. So that's the distribution code. We're going to talk about ncurses, which is the way that we get this colorful screen to happen. And it's the way that we don't redraw the board like we did in 15. You don't have to redraw the board this time. You can just refresh and update it. And you can actually have a cursor moving along so that the person can enter numbers on the board. So look at ncurses, which is the mechanism for doing that. And then the things that you guys are going to have to implement that aren't in the game when you're given the distribution code are moving the actual cursor. So right now you have a cursor and it's just frozen in the middle and it can't move yet. So you guys have to accept movement from the user of the cursor. So allow them to move. Then allow them to change the board, right, in order to play the game. Allow them to input numbers into blank spaces. But you have to be careful not to allow them to change what came with the board. So you guys know the game Sudoku, you get some numbers, and we'll go into it, but you get some numbers and then you input the other values to solve the puzzle. You can't allow the user to change the numbers that are already there to begin with, because then the puzzle won't be, that's the whole point of the puzzle, right? So you have to keep track of which ones they can change and allow them to change the ones they want to change. Allow them to delete them or allow them to put in new numbers, etc. So that's the allow replacement of a blank with a number. You can also replace a number with a blank if they want to delete something that they've put in, but not something that was already there. And then you guys have to check for an invalid move. So you guys, we'll talk about the game Sudoku, but there are some moves that are simply invalid. That if the user makes that move, you know that they've made a mistake that will prevent them from solving the puzzle. So you want to warn them and say, you might not want to put that there, or are you sure about that? Something like that, in order to catch your user when they're making these mistakes. And then you have to check, much like in game of 15, whether the game has been won. So this is the whole problem set. This is everything you have to do. There are, of course, some questions you have to answer and stuff like that. So do read the PDF. Don't rely on me for everything you have to do in the problem set. But this is the crux of the problem set. So this is what you'll be spending time working on this week. I would say 15 gives you a great toolbox. PSET 3 gives you a great toolbox for this. But this does add a little bit more complexity. The game Sudoku is more complex than the game 15, and so there's a lot more to think about. So you might want to start this a little bit earlier than you started game of 15. And everyone here, I know you guys start early because you come here on Sunday nights, so I'm not worried, but to the people at home. Okay, so let's dive into the distribution code. So I'm going to open my terminal window here, and I'm in my directory for PSET 4 that I just CP'd into my home directory, PSET 4. And you see the files here. So makefile is the same as in 15, the makefile. It's what allows you to compile your program instead of using the long GCC, using GCC with all the tags, and that ends up being a really long command. You can use the makefile instead. So peek in there and see what it's doing. See how it's different than 15. See how it's the same as 15. Then you have debug.bin, which is a set of, I think it's 9 puzzles that can be used for debugging. And the reason this is really useful is because when you're testing your win function, you're going to need to solve the entire game, right, in order to see if your win function is working properly. And in here, you have puzzles that are really easy to solve because they're only missing several values. So once you put those in, you'll be able to test your code much quicker. And my year when we did this, we didn't have these debug puzzles, so you actually had to solve your entire puzzle every time you wanted to check your win function. And I know at least my friends played pranks on me and like would read me the wrong solution so that my win function wouldn't work at least 3 times at 3 a.m. on a Thursday night. So because of that, and not because of my personal anecdote, but because we want to make it easier for you to test, we've included these debug puzzles. And then you have leet.bin, which is the leet puzzles or the harder puzzles to solve. So this is just a level. These puzzles are harder. And then as opposed to noob.bin, and those are the easier puzzles. So you have a set of puzzles in each of those. And then log.txt is just a text file that keeps track of every move the user makes. This is purely so that we can automate tests of your code. So be sure, while you have a lot of liberty in this problem set to change things and to change the main function, to change really anything you're given, don't change anything that serves to log moves. There's a function log move. Don't change that. Don't change log.txt because we need this in order to automate tests. Then you have Sudoku, the executable. This is because I actually made Sudoku. So it doesn't come with it. You actually have to make it the first time, but I already did that. And then you have Sudoku.c and Sudoku.h. So let's peek in to Sudoku.c first. So I actually typed it, but OK. There we go. OK, so here's Sudoku.c. You see all these header files included, which means we're referencing all of these libraries, one of which is Sudoku.h, which we will get to. This file, you can see down here, it has 615 lines. So it's a huge amount of code that we're giving you. And it's all very useful. And looking through this and making sure you understand it is the best way to start this problem set. I know you guys want to dive in and, you know, get things done as quickly as possible. But I really strongly advise you to actually read through this code because it will make the implementation of what you have to do 100 times easier. So taking this shortcut and not reading through this code and just trying to start will hurt you in the long run because you'll end up spending way more time actually implementing than you would have had you read this. So do make sure you read through this. We're going to go through the main function very quickly because I want to get to what you guys actually have to implement. But the problem set spec walks you through the important parts of this 600 lines of code. Okay, so definitely take the time to look through that because it will definitely help you in your implementation. So in that vein, we'll kind of go down and see some of the most important parts. So here what you see on the screen is a declaration of a struct. Do you guys know what a struct is from lecture? Okay, it might be this week. So a struct is a way of grouping together several variables that all have something in common. So in this case, everything within the struct could easily have been declared by itself as a variable. So you could have a char star level. Notice that string is gone. Now all strings are char stars. So you could have just had a separate variable, char star level, and then you could have had an int to represent the game board, just like in 15. So all these things in 15 would have been their own variables. Now we're introducing this idea of a struct, which is kind of like a wrapper for your variables. What is the name of this struct? G, exactly. So G is right there on the bottom if you can't see it. So the reason that we put this all in G is because these are all global variables. We want to keep track of them as global variables that all have to do with playing the game. So we wrap them in the struct called G. And then how would I access if I want to get the variable level? How would I access level? G.level, exactly. So you guys did do structs. You guys know? No? Okay. Well, then you're very good at answering these questions anyway. So basically, g.level is the level we're at in the game right now. G.board, and then g.board is the game board. So same way in 15, you had a d by d game board. Now you have a 9 by 9 game board. The board's number is just in the catalog of boards. This is like board number 5 or board number 6 or whatever that is. G.top, g.left. Are the top left coordinates. So this is like int top and int left. Similarly, int y and int x are also two separate variables. It's not one variable that's y comma x. It's two variables. So you have g dot y and g dot x. And what are g dot y and g dot x? Yeah, so it's the coordinates of the board. So here I have a really poorly drawn board because I couldn't get a volunteer to draw it for me. So let's number this board, actually. Let's number the coordinates. So if I'm in this box right here, 0, 0, exactly. So I'm going to put 0, 0. What's this one? 1, 0, exactly. So y is 1 and x is still 0. So notice that we're going y first. We're going y first. So this is very important. So you go y first, just like in 15. So it sounds counterintuitive because you're used to coordinates being x comma y. But when you think about what you did in 15, you are also dealing with y comma x, basically, right? Because you are always going down the row and then across to the columns. Okay, so just think of it as being just like 15. Don't think of it as something new and confusing. You've done this already. Okay, so then this is 0, 1, obviously 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and the same way over here. And that'll come in handy later. But so if I'm in this box, how do I get 4? If I'm in this box. What? Yeah, so how do I call the y? Yeah, g dot y. Okay, so to get this 4, if my cursor is located here, I would do g dot y. So this g dot y, g dot x is the location of the cursor. Because you guys are actually moving the cursor in this. Or you guys don't have to be responsible. You'll see. You guys don't have to be responsible for actually moving the cursor in terms of n curses, but you are responsible for telling the cursor where it should be using this g dot y and g dot x. Okay? So that's what this struct does. So those are variables that are, some of them are going to be very, very useful to you. G dot board is going to be very useful. G dot y, g dot x are going to be very useful. Okay? So if I wanted this, we said if I was here and I wanted the 4, then I would do g dot y to get this 4. What if I'm here and I want my actual position in this board? How is the board stored in memory? Same way as in 15. In g.board, which is a two-dimensional array of integers. So the same as in 15, right? Nothing new here. So if I'm here and I want my position in the board, what do I type? g.top and g.left would be the top left. Yeah. So if I want this, what do I do? Is it g.board yx? That's close.
G.board
xy. No, yx is the right order, but do we have a variable y? G.y, g.x, exactly. So when you're here, you're at g.board in brackets, then g.y in brackets, g.x, right? So your cursor's current position on the board is g.board, g.y, g.x. And that will be incredibly useful. That's what you're going to be using most of the time. Okay? So that's what we're getting out of this struct. So now you guys should take what we just did there and in that way go through the rest of this program, right? Break it down. Say, when might this be useful? What is it doing here? And it's commented very well. So you guys shouldn't have too much of a problem figuring out what's going on. But you should say at each point, when might this be useful? How might I use this? Keeping in mind what you guys have to implement, right? So here you have all the prototypes of all the functions that have been written. So you can think about why each function is useful, and you can go down and actually see those functions. And then here's the main function, which drives all the action, all the gameplay. So you see the usage. You have to put what level you want to play, and you can put an optional what board number you want. So if you want the fifth game, if you want to keep playing the same game, for example, you can ask for a specific game. It checks that the number of arguments is correct. It checks that the level is one of the levels that was provided. You should continue to go through this and see everything else. It checks if you did provide 3 arguments, that means you know what game you want to play, which board. Else it picks a, what does it do if you haven't provided what game you want to play? Yeah, so it'll pick a random board, right? So you go through this. And you see everything. This is another really important part. So it says the comment is let the user play. So how are we actually letting the user put in input? So we have this int ch variable, so ch for char. And then we have a do while loop that allows the user to input chars or keyboard input in order to play the game. So you take this getch is get char. And it's getting the user's input from the keyboard, okay? And then it turns it to an uppercase letter. So you know that whatever the user's typing in, if they type the letter N, for example, they're going to type a lowercase n, presumably, and it's going to be turned to an uppercase N. So then you have this switch statement here. So the switch statement takes that ch, takes that char variable, and it, why is it, here's what something to think about. Why, I keep saying it's a char, but why is it actually an int? Yeah, so what is, it's the ASCII value of the char, exactly. Exactly, it's the ASCII value. So in this case, you have to put it in single quotes, right? If you want the actual char, you put in single, if you want the char, you put it in single quotes. Okay, so in this case, we have a switch statement that takes ch, and then it has cases for different values of ch. So it'll have case n. So this is basically the equivalent of saying, if ch equals n, okay? That's the equivalent statement, okay? So you take a case statement because you're going to have all these different cases and you don't want to keep saying if ch equals whatever. You don't want to keep doing that, so you put in a case statement where you know that each case is a value for ch. So the first one is n. So if the user types an n, what do? New game. If the user types r, restart the game. Control L, it redraws. And then if they put in an error char, you don't want to log that. And basically, while ch not equal to Q, why? What does Q do? It quits the game. So while the user has not quit the game, keep letting them type in input. Does that make sense? So while the char they're putting in is not Q, let them keep playing the game. So now what's at the end of each of these cases? You can see two of the cases now. How do they end? Break. So it's very important to put a break statement. It's easy to forget. I don't know why, but it's easy to forget. And if you don't put it, what's going to happen? If I didn't have this break where the cursor is right now, what would happen with case N? It would just keep going all the way down until the next break. Right? So case N would encompass everything below it until you have a break. So make sure to remember your breaks in the switch statement. Okay, so like I said before, when you look through this, you should automatically think, well, what might be useful from this? So what might be useful from this? Being able to get this value N or R or Q or control L from the user, how might that be useful to you? You'd probably use that to move the game. Exactly. What do you want to listen for when you're moving the game? Yeah, exactly, the arrow keys. What about something else that this is useful for? Exactly, the numbers. When people are putting in number values into these spots, you want to be able to get the number that they're typing in, right? So that's how this will be very useful to you. You can do it in very much the same way. You could also do it with an if statement, right? We'll get to actually putting in numbers, but that's a look at, those are basically the most important parts of Sudoku.c. The main function ends right there. And you can look at the functions below to see what they're doing. But their names are pretty self-explanatory. So let's look now at Sudoku.h. Okay, so in Sudoku.h, we have these constants up here for the author and the title of the game. So this is when you saw the image of the game. This is to say who the game is written by, so you should obviously change this to your name. You can change the title if you want, and then you should change some of these colors. And you'll see that it's very easy to make a very hideous game. So do change these colors. Notice that every color actually is defined in two parts, so you have to have a background color and a foreground color. That's the FG and the BG, so you have to define two variables for each color. And so the default background is white and the foreground is black. Notice that here we reversed that for the grid's colors. So that's where you want to change the colors, kind of personalize the game a little bit. You definitely have to change it to be your name and not by John Harvard. And then you basically have, oh, I already made it, so Sudoku. And I'll put noob. And there we get our Sudoku game, right? So you're going to customize it and change the colors of things and make it say your name. But basically, this is already built in. So I haven't changed anything, and this is what it comes with. Okay, so now I'm going to press Q to quit, and it says, okay, thanks, bye, and I'm back at my prompt. So any questions on Sudoku.c, Sudoku.h, basic overview? Okay, so now we're going to do a, so now when you're doing this, it's going to be valuable for you to use GDB for debugging, as it's always valuable to use GDB. But in this case, you will want to use it in an interesting, in an interesting way, because you want to see what's going on in the game while you're running GDB. Right, so you want to see what the game board looks like at each step in GDB, and in order to do that, you're going to have to debug in two different windows. So I'm going to demo this, but it's a little... Okay, let's see if you can see this. Okay, so we're going to run GDB, but before we do that, we have to make sure that we're on the same server in both our windows, because like I said, we're going to do this in two windows. So if I open another window, let me zoom in. Okay, let me make that smaller. Okay, so we have to make sure we're on the same server in both our windows, so we basically have to find out the name of our host. So I'm going to go host name, and it's going to tell me what server I'm on. So you guys are on the cloud, so you're on, but there are various servers inside the cloud, so you have to make sure you know which one you're at. So I'm at login-0.localdomain. So I have that, and now what I want to do is see... what number, if I run Sudoku noob 42 ampersand, I get this number here, which is the number that I want to know for when I run it in this window, so that I make sure that the two windows are on the same server and that they can communicate with each other. So in this one, I have to basically SSH to the cloud. Okay. So here, I'm actually in this window here, I'm running Sudoku right now because I ran it, right? I'm running it in the background. So if I want to keep this number here because I'm going to need it, so I'm going to copy this number. So I'm just doing a regular copy and paste, and then I can bring Sudoku to the foreground. Okay, so now our game looks kind of normal. And so now I'm running Sudoku in this window, and in this other window, I'm going to run GDB and see at each step what happens to my Sudoku game. So in this window, I'm going to run GDB, and then I'm going to run Sudoku, and I'm going to paste that number that I copied before. Okay, I see that number. So that's saying, okay, loaded symbols for, okay, cool. So basically now I'm running this window. Okay, we can cover up this because you don't actually need to see the name Sudoku. Okay, and now we should have a GDB prompt. Let me make sure. Okay. So you hit return and you get your GDB prompt. Now you can run GDB as normal, and then you can pay attention to the changes that happen in this window on the left. So basically we can put a breakpoint for the purpose of this demo. Let's put a breakpoint at draw numbers. So that's a function in main. Main calls draw numbers. So we're putting a breakpoint at draw numbers. Okay, so it made the breakpoint there, and now I'm ready to run the program. So I hit continue, which will run until the breakpoint. So it says continuing, and it's eventually going to hit draw numbers. So we did this. This is all in the spec, so this is where you guys are going to get it from. Okay, so now we continue, and it stopped at the breakpoint, right? I just hit restart in the other window. So we get to the breakpoint, and now we want to hit next and see for each number. So we're going to keep going next. And now see what happened in this board? See what happened in this window? You can see actually what's happening with each line that gets executed. So now what you want to do, you want to do this again. It's all in the spec how to do it. So you want to be running it in both windows, and you want to see for each time you hit next what happens on this board. So the function that we set a breakpoint at was draw numbers, right? So we stopped right before this draw numbers function. Now every time we hit next, we're drawing numbers, right? And so we can do this a million times, well, not a million, but a lot of times, right? Because it's going to have to draw all these spaces and all these numbers. So it's going to have to go through the 9x9 grid filling in the numbers. So what you want to do, maybe you won't want to debug this function, but you want to debug some of your functions that you write. You set a breakpoint at your function, and you see, okay, well, if the user typed in a 5 for cho, what's actually happening? Where is it going to put the 5? So you want to follow it in this window. You want to go to whatever line or whatever function you wrote that you think that you want to debug because you think there might be a problem there, and then you see as you hit next, what's actually happening on the board, kind of in real time. right? So this is going to be very, very useful, but it's a different way of GDB, of using GDB, because you usually just do it in the same window, but because you want to see the game actually get drawn out instead of all of a sudden seeing the changes, this might be very useful for you. Well, the question is, what was the thing I typed in the beginning? It's all in the problem set spec. So that's literally where I got it from. It's all through here.
Is the
ampersand in? Yeah, so you put the ampersand. It's all in here. I just wanted to draw extra attention to it because it will help you a lot in debugging, and I wanted everyone to be clear on using the two windows and making sure to copy and paste that number that you get in the first window when you run Sudoku in the background. Okay, so this is all here. So if you didn't catch it or if it was a little slow, just look right in here, and you'll do it step by step, and it'll explain it for you. But definitely look to that resource. It'll definitely be helpful. So basically, we've been through this, so the two-window GDB debugging is what you really want to get from this. And we look through Sudoku.c. A lot of it, you want to go through all 600 lines, and Sudoku.h is where you're changing your name and personalizing your game. So ncurses, basically what we saw in Sudoku.h, so it'll allow you to change the colors of your program, it allows you to personalize it, and like I said, you always have to have a foreground and a background color, so we went over that, and it also allows you to have a cursor. So you have a user interface, you have a person moving, you have your user actually hitting the arrow keys in order to move a cursor, and they can see the cursor on the screen. So you're basically updating the board. You can move the cursor to a certain location on the board, and we can keep track of where on the board our cursor is, right? Because of what we already did, right? The g.board, g.y, g.x. And then you can just change what's at that location. You don't have to, like in 15, redraw the entire board. So when you played 15, if you ever noticed, if you ever scrolled up in your terminal window, not with the up arrow, but actually scrolling up with your mouse or trackpad, if you scrolled up, you would see as many moves as you made, that many 15 games. Because every time you made a move in 15, it redrew the entire board. So it would clear your screen by like moving down, I guess, 24 lines, and then it would redraw the board. So if you scrolled up, you'd see a history of all the moves. So in this case, you're not going to have that, because it's just going to go and update that location on the board with ncurses. Ncurses allows us to do that. So you guys don't actually have to write any ncurses stuff. You just have to understand that that's how the board is getting updated. What you care about is what's under the hood. You care about what's actually stored in this board and the logic behind the game. But you don't really care. I mean, you do care because it's important, but you don't have to implement ncurses. But you should look at the functions because they're cool. And there's some additional features that you can implement in the game. So like you're required to implement the several key features that enable gameplay, and then you have to implement one additional feature, and there's suggested additional features in the spec. So some of them have to deal with ncurses. So if you're interested in this, like making games in Terminal actually look kind of nice and have user interfaces, definitely you might want to look at those additional features and put those in. So that's ncurses. So now move, I said we have this ability to move the cursor, and we already saw that switch statement. We already saw that switch statement with the CH, right, where we're accepting N or Control L or Q, right? So in the same way, you can accept the keys, right, key up, key left, key down, key right from the user in order to know where to move the cursor, right? So this should be pretty simple, right? You know that you have to be able to move the cursor, and this is the example of doing it with a switch statement, but like I said, you could also do it with an if statement. You can have a function that takes one argument, which is whatever the user typed in. So when you do get ch up there in the main function, you know where we saw get, it looks like get char. When we did that and we stored it in this variable ch, you can pass ch to a function called move cursor or whatever you want to call it. This is like really up to you. You could do it like this way in the switch statement, or you can just pass it to a function that either has a switch statement or that has some if statements, etc. So it's totally up to you, but basically this kind of logic will work, right? You get this ch variable, you check what it is, and based on that, you move the cursor. Now, how do we move the cursor? What do we have? I said that we have the keys key up, key down, key left, and key right. And we already said that g.board, g.y, g.x is the current location of the cursor. There's a typo there. There's two brackets after g.y. It should just be one. Is the spot on the board where the cursor is. So g.y is where the cursor is vertically, and g.x is where the cursor is horizontally. So you basically want to change g.y and g.x as the user moves. So if the user hits key left, what do you want to do? So let's say I'm here. So this is where... What? Yeah, so you want to do g dot x minus 1, or g dot x minus minus, right? If I'm here, my y is 4, so g dot y is 4, g dot x is 3, and if I hit left, I want to be here. So I want to be at g dot y is still 4, but g dot x is now 2, or 1 less than 3, right? So the same logic works the other way, right? But what if the user is here and they want to go down? You don't want, so technically they kind of can. I mean, your cursor would just kind of go off the screen or go into the blackness. So you don't want that, but so you have to stop them, right? One of the additional features is to allow them to wrap around the board. So if they're here and they hit down, they end up here. So that's something you might think about implementing, but otherwise just don't let them go down if they're in the last row. And don't let them, so similar to game of 15 when we didn't let them swap. If we didn't like check below the last row for swapping purposes, right? So same thing. And you want to do this function show cursor. It's a void function. You call it just like that with a semicolon. But you want to call show cursor every time after you have made a change to the cursor location, because that will actually move the cursor in terms of end curses. So you can look in that function. CS50 staff wrote it. So look in that function what it actually does. Because if you just update the value where it should be, that's updating the value that where the cursor should be in terms of y and x. That's not actually moving the cursor there. Okay, you're telling the cursor where it should be, but you're not actually moving it there. Okay, so similarly, this function show cursor is going to be very important. For example, when we get to later, if the person's making an invalid move, you display this little banner down here that says that move was invalid, or are you sure you want to do that? And so when you display that banner, in order to display it, ncurses sends the cursor down there, changes what that part of the screen looks like, and then if you don't do show cursor after that, the cursor will stay at the end of the banner. Okay, so you want to call show cursor every time you, for whatever reason, move the cursor. Okay, so anytime you change where the cursor should be, call show cursor to actually send it there. Okay, that makes sense? So that's how we're moving the cursor. So that's a big part of this problem set, right? Enabling the user to move around the board. And then the next important part is to keep track of, first of all, whether the game has been won. Because if the game has already been won, you want to freeze the game. You don't want to let them change anything anymore. So you don't let them change anything on the board if the game has already been won. And you also don't let them change anything on the board that came with the board. Because if it came with the board, that means that's definitely part of the solution, right? Don't let them mess that up, right? Because that's basically the rules of the game, right? If you did Sudoku on paper, you wouldn't be able to change anything that was already given, right? In one of those books, for example. So you have to keep track of what was there to begin with. How could you do this? How can you keep track of what numbers were in the original game? Yeah, you can store what all of them were. So it's actually on the slide. You can choose to make a copy of the board. Before you allow any moves, before the user starts changing anything, make a copy of the board. And then you know what the original board was, what the original setup was, and you don't let them change any numbers that were in the original board. What do you let them change from the original board? Yeah, so the period spaces, the dots, but what are those actually stored as in our array of integers? Zeros. So you let them change everything that's a zero in the original board. And there might be other ways to do this as well, but this way is kind of simple, right? You guys have made copies of things before. You guys have used the two-dimensional array to navigate this kind of game board in 15, right? So you guys are pretty familiar with this already. So you can use something like this to copy over at all the elements of the original board and make sure that you're only changing if it's a zero. So this means that anytime you get user input and you want to place it, you have to check that in the original board, the location where your cursor is at now is a zero. So when the user wants to change something, they're going to go there with their cursor, and then they're going to type a number. So you're going to know what they want to change it to, and you're going to know where they are in the board. So you want to check in the original board, is that index, so for example, 4, 1, is that a zero? If it is, then change it in the actual board, not the copy. Okay, so the copy of the board you don't change. You make it once, you know the original, you never change it. You change the board variable, okay? which is already made for you, and you change that one. Okay? Does that make sense? Making sure, so they can't change it if it was already there, and if the game was won, they also can't change anything. Okay? So that's with, you guys are going to implement the function, the Boolean function won, to see if the game is won. So if the game is won, you don't want to let them. So only if the game is not won do you want to let them make changes. Make sense? Okay. So now we said we don't want to let them replace things that came with the original board, but we do want to let them replace both blanks, so basically zeros in the original board, or they're represented as dots, but their value under the hood is zero. You want to let them replace the blanks, and you want to let them replace the non-original numbers. So if they put in a number, but now they want to change it, that's fine. They can change the number they put in. They just can't change the original numbers. So basically, one way of doing this, and again, this is just one way of doing it. You can have a function that takes one argument, which is the ch, right, which is what they want to put in that spot in the board. And like we said, this is actually the ASCII value of that. So if they put in a number 1, you're not passing the number 1 to this function. You're passing the ASCII value of 1 to this function. Okay? That makes sense? So if the ch that they're passing is a 0, a period, a key backspace, that's if they hit backspace, and then key DC, which is if they hit delete, if they hit any of those things, and they're at a certain spot in the board, so their cursor is here, let's say, and they hit any of those things, I want to go to this location in the array, and obviously I have to check if it's a blank or if it came with the original board or not. Right, and if it didn't come with the original board and they hit 0 or a period on it, then I want to set that value to what? That value in the board, what do I set it to? 0. Exactly, because that's basically them deleting whatever they put there. Okay, so you set that to 0. And so that's if it's 0 or period or backspace or delete. What if it's numerical between 1 and 9? Then what do we want to do? We want to go, we're still at that spot in our array, right? So instead of putting 0 in, we want to put the value that they set, right? We want to put whatever value they inputted. However, like I said, when we put 1, that's not actually the number 1. That's the ASCII value for 1. And I don't know it off the top of my head. You don't need to, because what did we learn in Caesar? What could we do in this case? So when we wanted Caesar, when we wanted A through Z to be 0 through 25, what did we do? We subtracted A. Now we want 1 through 9 to be 1 through 9. So what do we subtract? What? 0. Why do we subtract 0 and not 1? 1 becomes 0. Yeah, if we subtracted 1, then 1 would become 0, and 9 would be 8. We don't want to be 0 indexed in this case. This is probably the one scenario where you don't want to be 0 indexed. So we want to be 1 through 9, so we subtract 0. Does that make sense to everyone? So I don't know the ASCII value for 1, so I'm completely making this up. But let's say the ASCII value for 0 was 50 and the ASCII value for 1 was 51. To get 1 to actually mean the number 1 as opposed to the ASCII value 51, which it means right now in this variable, we subtract 0 or we subtract 50. So if you subtract 0 in single quotes, that's going to subtract the ASCII value of 0, which in my hypothetical example is 50, which it's not actually, right? That make sense? Mm-hmm. What doesn't make sense?
Well, to me, it doesn't make, how can you subtract 0 in every case? Because the zero is always the ASCII value that's, under whatever you're writing.
So she said, why do you always subtract 0? Well, it's the same way as in Caesar when we always subtracted A, right? In order to just shift from ASCII values to numerical values. So if the ASCII value, like I said, for A were to be 51, if we subtract 50, we get 1. If the user put in an 8 and we subtract 50, we get 8, right? Because the 8 is represented as a 58 in my example, right?
Oh, so 0 starts out.
It just offsets it, right? So if the numbers 1 through 9 are, if this is a ASCII chart, if 1 through 9 is here, you want 1 through 9 to be actually 1 through 9, so you move it over. That makes sense? Okay. And then every time you change numbers, you call the function drawNumbers. So same way, every time you move the cursor, you haven't actually moved the cursor, you've just said where the cursor should be, and you have to call showCursor. Now, you haven't actually changed the board, you've changed our representation of the board under the hood, so you've changed the array that stores all the values, but you haven't drawn that for the user. So you call drawNumbers to do that. And I think it actually has an underscore. draw numbers. That was the function that we debugged. So I think it has an underscore, so be careful. Yeah? Clear? So that's the second big part, allowing them to put in values. And now here's the hard part. I think this is the hardest part. This is the function that's going to take you a lot of time. And part of the reason it's going to take you a lot of time is because it involves some math logic. So you're going to have to figure out a lot of things just about the game that make something an invalid move. So we can go through now what makes something an invalid move in the game Sudoku. So if I'm on this board, what is the rule of Sudoku? What has to happen in each row, column, and box? Yeah, exactly. So you have to have the numbers 1 through 9 in each row, in each column, and in each box. That means in each of these 3x3 boxes, you can't have 2 3s or 2 4s. You have to have one of each of the numbers from 1 through 9. Right? So basically, how will we know if something is an invalid move? If they put in a number, what would make that number that they put in an invalid move? Exactly. So if there's one of the same number in that column, in that row, or in that box around it. So let's say, so I'm here, right? And I want to put a number here to check if that's a valid move. I have to check all of these, right? I have to check all of these and all of these, all of these, and then all of these to make sure that they're not that number. So this is where you have to think mathematically a lot. So the rows and the columns kind of make sense, right? So we've moved around a board. We know how to wrap around numbers. So maybe this isn't that hard. Maybe if I'm here, I can check that the one below it, and we know how to access the one below it, right? Because we have these variables for g.y and g.x. Notice that when you move down, g.y actually increases, right? When you move down, it increases, even though you're saying we're moving down. It's actually the y value is going up because the board is drawn from top to bottom. Okay? So here, you want to check below it, basically, or you can go above it. And you can wrap around when you get to the end, right? And how do we always wrap around? Right. So modulo was the answer. So we keep track of what index we're at, and when we're at index 8, we want to modulo back around, right? So we want to wrap around, and we don't want to go back here, right? Because if I'm trying to put in a 4, let's say, and I'm checking all of these for 4s, I don't want to check myself for a 4, right? I don't want to accidentally say, oh, there's already a 4 in that column, because that's the one I just put in. So you ignore that one. So same way for the rows. You just go across with the g.x values, and you check all of them to make sure that number doesn't already exist. If you find that number, then you return true, that it's an invalid move. Okay, so then that is an invalid move. If you don't, then that's fine. So now the tricky part and the challenge of this part of the problem set, and I'd even say like this is a big, probably the biggest challenge in the entire problem set, is figuring out how to check this box. Okay, figuring out how to check starting here, for example, and going 2 over and 2 below in both dimensions. Okay, so you have to check that nowhere in this box is there the same value. So to give you sort of a hint at this, let's say that I am, okay, ignore this box. I don't want to erase it because I'll erase the grid. But so ignore this box. Let's say I'm here. So I'm trying to put in a value here, let's say. So what's my index? I'm at g.board what? 1, 5, exactly. So I'm at coordinates, let's say 1, 5. And I want to check all of these other coordinates. So let's say I want to just start up here to start checking and check 2 across and 2 below. What are the coordinates here?
0, 3.
Okay, so you want to basically take these two coordinates and find the mathematical relationship between them. Because once you get to this coordinate, it's easy to go 3x3, right? It's like a 3x3 game of 15, right? You already have the tools to do that. You have the tools to go like through each element in a 3x3 array, right? You already know how to do that. So if you get here and you treat it as a 3x3 array, then you can go to each value and you know you won't go too far, right? Because you're just treating this as a 3x3 array.
But you still can't check
yourself. But you still can't what? Yeah, and you still can't check yourself. Good point. You still have to skip over yourself. But that shouldn't be too hard, right? Because you know where you are. You know that you're at g.y, g.x. So that just includes a part of an if statement saying, like, if you want to skip yourself, you say, if I'm at this value, g.board, g.y, g.x, don't worry if I'm the same as the number you're comparing to, because obviously you will be. So that's one way of doing it. Again, you can find a simpler way, but one, maybe, I don't know, you can find a harder way that makes more sense to you. It's all very relative. But if you can find the mathematical relationship between any part in this box and the first part, that will be immensely valuable to you, because then you start with y and x being whatever y and x are here, and then you move down the two-dimensional array. Does that make sense? Okay, so think about any ideas for, so let's do each of these top corners, and maybe that'll give you more of a hint. So what's this top corner? 0, 0. This one we did was 0, 3. What's this one? And then these are 0, 0, we already did. This one is 3, 0, 3, 3. What do we have to this one? You can already tell. What do they all have in common? They're like multiples of 3, or they're divisible by 3. Right? They're evenly divisible by 3. So 0 divided by 3, 3 divided by 3, 6 divided by 3. So think about that. Think about the fact that there are multiples of 3 and tools that we've already done with division and with modulo and how we can deal with values of, with, if we want to go from, for example, 1, 5 to 0, 3, what's a way we can do that in C? And don't say it. But think about, so take one of these boxes, write out all of the coordinates for all of these spaces, and then think about how any of those coordinates can be whittled down to 0, 3. Or in this case, 0, 6. And it has to work, right? Whatever you come up with has to be general enough that it'll work in any of them. Okay? So that's going to be your big challenge. That's going to be the big mathematical, logical problem you have to solve. Okay? And then implementing that. So if you think of another way of checking these boxes, like going, you know, below, above, and to the left, however many times, as long as it works in any case, you should be fine. Okay? Okay, so that's checking if it's an invalid move. And if you've done this, then really checking if you've won the game is fairly easy, right? Because winning the game is the same as not having any invalid moves, right? So you can call your invalid move function. Oh, and sorry, I think, so if you have an invalid move, you put up a banner that says you have an invalid move. So there's a function already written called show banner, and all you have to do is pass it a string of what you want your banner to say. So you just call that. And after you do show banner, what did I warn you about before? What do you have to do after show banner? Show cursor. Yeah, show cursor effectively moves the cursor and puts it in the right place, or it shows it in the right place, I guess. So as an aside. So anyway, when you won the game, you do the same thing. You put up a banner if the game has been won. But then to check if the game has been won, you basically go to each box. So this is the same thing you did in 15. You go to each box in your two-dimensional array, and you make sure that there are no zeros and no invalid moves. Okay, does that make sense? So at each point, you would say, is this a zero, and is this an invalid move? And if you get false for both of those conditions, then you know that one is fine. You just have to go through and make sure they are all fine. Okay, and then if you get to the end of your loop that goes through this 9x9 array, you get to the very end of your loop, you should know at this point that you haven't made any errors and that there are no blanks. So you basically know that you're done, that the game has been won. Does that make sense? And if it's not won, if the game is not won, what do you have to do? Because now you, in order to get around, you're moving your cursor, right? You have to show cursor if you move your cursor. If not, then that's fine. If you just have a for loop that's like j and y, I and j, and you don't use g.y, g.x. Whenever you use g.y, g.x, and you increment those, you're moving them, right? You're actually moving the cursor. But if you just have another variable, I, and another variable, j, to go to each spot in the array, then you don't have to worry about showing your cursor.
Going back to checking each row and column and then checking each box.
Yeah.
Do a 2D array, so like the big box and then do 2D arrays for
Yeah, so the question was, when you're checking each row, each column, and each box, you treat them as 2D arrays? Yeah, so you could treat this actually, when you're checking the column, you can really treat that as a one-dimensional array. You're not changing the implementation of the board, but all you care about if you're checking a column is it's still a two-dimensional array, right? Because you're at a fixed X value. You're not ever incrementing X. X is whatever column you put your number in. So if I put my number here, my X is going to be, G dot X is going to be 0. So I don't have to increment that. I don't have to have any loop to do with that, but I have to increment my Y. Right? So I treat that kind of like a one-dimensional. But if you're going to the whole box, you have to move in G and in Y. So that's like treating that's your typical 2D array like in Game of 15. And we're actually done at this point, so now any questions that you have about anything? First about this, any questions about one? Invalid move? Okay, any questions on anything we've done?
Does one check after every move?
Does one check after every move? So you have to make sure, I believe this isn't done for you, I think you have to check before you allow the user to change the board, you check two things. You check, is what they're trying to change part of the original board? And you check, is it a 0 in the original board or not? And you check if the game has been won. And if the game has been won, don't let them change anything.
So when we do 1, we just actually need to check if there's no 0 because errors have been checked in invalid move, right?
Yeah, you only have to, well, no, so if invalid move won't actually stop the person from putting it there. So invalid move will let the person put the wrong answer inside the board. It'll just tell them, like, are you sure? Like, hint, maybe don't do that. They still have to change it to the right move. So if you've had invalid move before, that doesn't mean, and the person can still just ignore that and keep that value in there. So you actually have to check invalid move for each value in the board when you're checking your one function. Okay, so she said, is there a way to freeze the board, or do you just have to come up with a specific way to make the user not able to touch anything? Well, right now, the user's board is effectively frozen in the distribution code. They can't do anything. They can't move the cursor. They can't put in values. You guys give them the ability to move the cursor and put in values. So you guys control when they have that ability, right? So like we said with the adding numbers, you stop them from adding numbers by having a conditional that says, while game is not won, or if game is not won, make this change. Right? Any other questions? Okay, so I'll stay behind if anyone has questions they want to ask me one-on-one. But thanks for coming. Good luck on this week's problem set.